From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 800-462-7413. Of course, along with your calls, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about strategies on how to navigate through the emergency room, that place that can sometimes be a jungle, especially if you have a problem. And we're going to talk about anti-inflammatories, NSAIDs, ibuprofen and the like, heart attack risk, whether or not you should take it, who is at risk for that.
And what's our recipe?
Malaysian potato salad. I'm used to Irish potato salad, Wisconsin potato salad, and of course, the most famous at all, my mother Rhoda's potato salad. But this is Malaysian potato salad. Great for this time of year.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones now, Zorba, at 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us from Ontario, Canada. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
I'm a give you a little backdrop on my history. I'm a 50-year-old truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
I used to eat one meal a day. And I was gaining weight, and I got up to 400 pounds. I decided I had to do something, so I started eating more meals and exercising a little bit that I could do. I had a back injury years ago, so I'm limited to what I can do. I started drinking this Premier Protein. It's 30 grams of protein, 160 calories for 3 meals a day, and I have dropped 45 pounds in 3 months. And I'm continuing to see signs of body weight loss,
mm-hmm.
but I'm afraid of what the side effects would be to continuing. I only have one meal a day still, and it's usually a breakfast meal. It could be meat or it could be a breakfast, and then I'll have the 3 protein shakes throughout the day. Every 4 to 5 hours, just to make sure that I'm having something, an intake, plus my 6 bottles of water. And I was wondering if that's an unhealthy way of continuing or if that's still a good way to do it.
First of all, how long did it take you to get up to this weight? Did that take over a period of years that it finally just kind of creeped up on you?
Well, it's creeped up over 30 years, and before my accident, I was 125 pounds in the military.
Wow.
And when I left the military, I stopped exercising. I started driving. And then I had an accident in 97 where they said I'd never walk again. But I got past that, walked with a cane, and I used a chair and went back to school, got my education, computer programming. But they were only paying $9 an hour. So I went back to trucking because I could make $20-$25.
Huge difference. So first off, I think what you're doing is right because, you know, your weight is, as you know, much too large for your frame. I mean, nobody, you know, if you're 400 pounds, it doesn't matter what your frame is. It's too much. So getting that weight off is a really key issue. And the real issue for a lot of people is how do you control your calories? Now, there was a very interesting article came out in the New England Journal of Medicine a couple of years ago that looked scientifically at which weight loss programs tend to work and which ones do not tend to work. Let's look with a scientific eye, see what happens. Nutritionists that doctors, you know, send their patients to, do they work or not work? And the answer is no. They don't tend to work that well. And what tended to work well were where you had a controlled calorie diet. In other words, what you're doing is a controlled calorie diet. You're having the protein shakes, so we know they're protein. Usually they're either soy or whey protein, one of the two or both together. You've got a control over it. You're having one meal a day. One of the issues I would do for sure is I'd probably take a multivitamin. I would take 2,000 milligrams or units, they're the same, of vitamin D because you may not be getting enough vitamin D. You may not be getting that. And then I would question whether or not you need any calcium, maybe a 500 milligram calcium tablet. And that, those are the supplements I would take because they might be missing. But I think on the whole, you're doing a great job. You've lost 45 pounds already. Do you have trouble keeping this up and doing it? Are you hungry all day?
Oh, no, no. They're quite filling. Even though they're 160 calories, just one of those, it takes off the hunger for 4 hours. But what I was worried about is, like you said, the lack of vitamins. I'm vitamin B deficient, so I have to give myself an injection just to make sure I get the vitamin B.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed muscle cramps and, like when I eat solid foods for the breakfast, it does seem to bother my stomach for the day because it's like, no, mm-hmm. It's too full.
Yeah, I think I would take some calcium for the muscle cramps. I'd take 500 to 1,000 milligrams. I've got a question, though. So what sort of an injection do you give yourself with vitamin B, and why would you inject it versus taking a tablet?
The tablets don't seem to bring the vitamin B up in my blood,
Is that vitamin B12 that you're injecting?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, B12 you have to inject because you don't have the ability to absorb that in the terminal ileum. Keep doing what you're doing. It looks good. It sounds good. A couple of years ago, I had a trainer, young trainer. I trained at the UW Surf. So it's a Dorian Gray trainer. They're all in their 20s, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. You can do it, and here it is. I'm kind of walking up and trying to do a push-up, and they're doing like 30 push-ups. But this one guy was a hockey player, and he had a phrase that I like because I said, why do you guys, you get so dressed up before you go out and knock each other out on the ice? And he said, look good, feel good, play good. And he said, even though it should be play well, that's what we say. So, the fact is when you look good, you start to feel good, and then you start to be better. And I think you're doing the right thing. Keep it up. It's working. And I think the weight is going to continue to come off.
Before you go, caller, I have to ask you, you self-inject that vitamin B?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Where do you do it?
In my thighs.
Yeah, it's like an insulin injection or anything else. And vitamin, you need if you're deficient in vitamin B12, if you have something called pernicious anemia, you cannot absorb B12. So you need an injection. Otherwise, you die from the vitamin deficiency. Mm. It's a very serious thing. The injection takes care of it completely.
It's just hard to imagine injecting myself with something.
Yes. But a lot of people with diabetics do it. And you bring up a good point, Tom. The first thing people say, if I recommend that you need insulin, is I don't want to inject. And actually, once you start to inject yourself, it's not an issue. And the needles today are really fine and do not hurt. They really don't. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Yep, we appreciate it. 1-800-462-7413. If you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. Before our next call, Zorba, strategies for navigating the emergency.
Yeah, now this is interesting. It really came from an article from Jane Brody of the New York Times that I was looking at. And Jane Brody is sort of the premier, one of the premier columnists for the New York Times when it comes to health and news.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the things she says are really good, and some of the things really date her as Jane Brody of the New York Times for the last 30 years writing the column. So, first of all, the number of emergency rooms in the country has dropped. There are apparently 22% fewer emergency rooms today than there were 20 years ago. So these are small hospital emergency rooms because the number of hospitals have also dropped over that time. And There are a couple of things that I think are really important. First of all, if it is a true emergency where you have to go in the hospital right away and you actually think, oh, I can get in the car and get there quicker than an ambulance, you are wrong. And the reason why you're wrong is the care begins when the ambulance gets there. You should think of the ambulance as a portable outreach of an emergency room because they get there, they look at you. If you need oxygen, they give you oxygen right away. I mean, I have people who go, well, I knew I was having a heart attack, so my wife threw me in the car and I drove to the ER. Mm-hmm. No, silly. Don't do that. What you want to do is you want the oxygen to start right away. They want to give you the right amount of aspirin to chew, and that can make the difference between life and death. So if it's a life and death emergency, there are three numbers. It's called 911. And, all cell phones dial 911, even if they're not hooked up and you're not paying money. By law, you can get a dead cell phone with a battery and dial 911. And I mentioned that to some people who may not have cell phones.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
Some people. Now, if you're going to go to the emergency room for a non-urgent problem on Saturday night, you're going to wait. Mm. Of course. Don't expect that you're not going to wait. But if all of a sudden your condition changes, you know, and you become nauseous and you feel really, really sick, it's important to get up and tell the receptionist or someone else. Very, very good point. But here's something very interesting that she said. Bring along a list of your medications and your pills. I think that's a very good idea. But what she never mentions in here is what electronic medical record are you on? Because you want to go to an emergency room of a hospital that is on the same electronic medical record. Why? Because your list may not be right. Mm-hmm. Your list may be wrong. Or you may not be taking the right medications at the right time because the right ones may be on the list. In other words, the difference between what's on the list sometimes and between what you're taking can be exceptional, which reminds me of a very important point. When you go to your doctor, every so often, bring all your pills with you so your doctor can actually sit there and say, now, Mrs. Goldberg, tell me what you're actually taking, because you would be surprised how often those lists are wrong, one place or another, 10 or 20% of the time, I am sure. Now, you can save a lot of unnecessary tests if you've got a medical history in there. That's what she talks about. Bring your medical history. And my thought is, you're right, bring your medical history, but even better, make sure your electronic medical record is up to date. And when you travel, make sure that you know how somebody can get into that electronic medical record when you travel.
Yeah. Every time I go to a doctor of anything, they ask me, is this right? They show me the medical record.
And that's exactly. Are the drugs you're taking correctly? Yeah. And that's really the important point. So she's got some good points about the ER, but you're going to an ER in somewhere else. You're in the ER and you're in the, you know, somewhere you're in Florida and you live in Wisconsin. You want to bring those records with you. But if you go to Florida every year to the same spot, call around to the hospitals, find the hospital that has your electronic medical record, because that means they can find yours in your home city. She doesn't mention that. And you know why? She's been doing this for 30 years. She's not thinking about the new ways.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. Now a Fox Lake, Wisconsin listener is with us, Zorba. Hi.
Hello, Dr. Zorba. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'd also like to say hello to Tom Clark. He was my favorite WPR host. Early morning, great guy.
You're an old guy.
You remember yeah, decades and decades ago, back in the 20s, that's what Tom did.
Hey, what my issue is, doctor, I've had osteoarthritis in my right knee for 25 years. I still got my knee I was born with. I've taken all kinds of different things, supplements, you know, the chondroitins, glucosamine chondroitin products, supplements that are across the counter. I had quite good luck with was a home remedy of drinking cinnamon tea a couple times a day with honey. I've had Synvix treatments that last up to about 6 months. I've had cortisone shots, which only last a week or two. What I have now is my left knee is starting to give me problems. I went to my family doctor, and he says, oh, you got to go see a carpenter. Well, excuse me, orthopedic surgeon. So what I've been looking for,
You know what the most important thing in comedy is? Timing.
Yeah.
And your timing
was
perfect.
Great. Yeah.
You caught Tom and me.
What I've been looking at is a stem cell therapy.
Worthless. Worthless. Doesn't work. Save your money. Doesn't work. It's got some promise, but there are a lot of promises in life that don't pan out. Does not work. Save your money. We're not there yet. Will we ever be there? Maybe. And once we get there, frankly, we might. If we could actually grow cartilage in knees, we would have a lot less knee surgery. So stem cell therapy doesn't do anything. And I get lots of questions about stem cell therapy all the time because it makes sense. Why can't you put stem cells in and they grow? And the answer is we don't know because we don't have it. They're not like seeds. Our bodies are individual. Why can't you put kidney cells in where the kidney is and have the kidneys grow? Same for the liver, same for the brain. And the answer is we're much more complex than just these seeds. One day it may happen, but we're not there yet. Save your money. Doesn't do much. The experiments, there are experimental experiments that are being done, you know, at verified areas. If you want to travel and do that, you know, from an experimental process, that's a different issue. And I really believe in research and people who want to do research and sort of donating their time and energy to do it. But if you're doing a research project, they cannot charge you under federal law. It's got to be for free. Now, I have a question. Are you thinking about getting a total knee? Obviously, you've been doing well without a knee replacement.
So far. Well, thank you very much, doctor, for your comments.
Oh, you're welcome. You take care now.
Have a good day. Bye.
You too.
Thanks so much for the call. Now, before we take a quick break, Zorba, we've learned over the years that our listeners don't always agree with you. So get ready to get yelled at again, Zorba. Here's another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from a listener named Sarah. She writes, Dr. Zorba, a few weeks ago, a listener asked if there is any value in eating some herbs. Your answer was that there isn't any research or value in eating herbs. I disagree with your response for a simple reason. If, while cooking, you use more herbs for seasoning, chances are high that you'll be using less salt to season whatever you're eating.
Yeah, good point.
This would be especially true when seasoning proteins like beef, chicken, pork, and fish. As you know, the American diet is way too high in sodium, and any time you use less of it, it's a good thing. It's replacing one seasoning that isn't healthy, sodium, with seasonings that don't have the long-term effects that excess sodium has. Thanks. I enjoy your show, and you and Tom have good radio rapport.
Oh, how nice is that? That was very nice. Well, first of all, she brings up a really good point. Use herbs and you use less salt. And so I love that idea, and thank you so much for correcting that. And I think the question was, what was the value of herbs? I don't remember the question exactly. And there may be micronutrients in herbs. They're organic, and there may be micronutrients that we don't know about. And, of course, herbs and spices have been used over the years, especially in Indian Ayurvedic medicine, but they're used in larger amounts. They're not just used to season foods. But when you look at the non-seasonings, the no-salt seasonings, herbs are wonderful, and they can get us away from salt so we can make our food tasty without being salty. So good point. I would say I agree 100% with that. 100%. How often do I say 100%? Not that often. Not that often.
That's true.
100%. I'm on board.
So thanks so much for the email. Do you disagree with the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stick around. Our recipe coming up, along with more of your calls, another interesting topic to talk about, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, Malaysian potato salad.
That's right, Malaysian potato salad. So did your mom make potato salad? Obviously, that was really a joke. Yeah. I remember my mother made potato salad, and it was my mom's potato salad. So, yeah. You know, it was the standard in my brain. But I had an aunt, Aunt Molly, and Aunt Molly made a potato salad that was really tasty. I liked it. And so one day I was at her house. My kids were young, and we were at a family picnic. And I said, I really like your potato salad. And I was kind of saying it more in a compliment, you know, like you say to somebody at a potluck, I really like your, you know, potato salad. And I said, what do you put in it? And she said, I can't tell you. It's a secret. And I thought, well, first of all, I succeeded in complimenting her on her potato salad.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell. She couldn't tell me what was in it. It was a secret. It turned out it was Lowry's seasoned salt. I found that out from my Aunt Shirley. Oh, she always uses Lowry seasoned salt, but she never tells anyone, but I know.
Garden.
But this is Malaysian potato salad.
Yeah.
So we're going to start out, and this is an important thing, one and a half pounds of Yukon Gold potatoes. Mm. You want to wash them. You want to leave them unpeeled, okay?
A pound and a half of Yukon Gold potatoes, washed and left unpeeled.
Now, Tom, when you go to the grocery store,
what are Yukon Gold potatoes?
Exactly what I was hoping you would ask. You know what? I don't even have to point to you and say this. There are many different kinds of potatoes, right, Tom?
Sure.
Yeah, there are
potatoes and little red potatoes.
There are the reds. My mother liked the reds, the red potatoes.
Yeah.
And then there are the large potatoes that there are the Idaho potatoes.
Yeah.
But there are a variety of other potatoes, and they all have starch, but they have different amounts of starch and different kinds of starch. And the Yukon Golds are a creamy potato. Red potatoes do taste differently than, for instance, Idaho potatoes. Mm-hmm. But you want to get Yukon Golds if you can. They are more expensive. They are, but they really do make a difference because they hold up well in a potato salad. So if you can get Yukon Gold, get it. They now have other, quote, gold potatoes. They're not the same as Yukon Gold.
Mm.
They're close, but they're not the same.
Yeah.
Two hard-boiled eggs, peel them and quarter them.
Two hard-boiled eggs, peeled and quartered.
Now, who would put in hard-boiled eggs unpeeled? I mean, would I ever just say two hard-boiled eggs? Why did I have to say peeled? No one would put them unpeeled.
It's true. It's true.
That's how life goes. One-half cup of light sour cream.
Half a cup of light sour cream.
Now, the nice thing about sour cream now is that it comes in a squeeze tube, which is kind of like you get in toothpaste. And it makes it easier because when I buy a small thing of sour cream, sometimes it stays in the refrigerator until it gets a little bit old.
Mm-hmm.
But this keeps it better. Cup of Greek yogurt.
Cup of Greek yogurt.
Plain Greek yogurt, not sweet.
Mm-hmm.
1.5 tablespoonfuls of sriracha sauce.
What is that?
Just sriracha sauce. Well, anyone who was born after 1960 probably knows what sriracha is. It is a hot pepper sauce, but it's not any hot pepper sauce. It's sort of like a mix between ketchup and pepper. I think it's something like that. There was a cookbook we did, which was the Sriracha Cookbook, and we had the guest chef. You remember that,
don't you, Tom? That's a long time ago.
Yeah, probably like several months. No, it was about a year or two ago.
Yeah.
But sriracha sauce is rooster sauce. You've seen it at every Asian restaurant that you go to.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
You see it. It's a big container. It's red sauce, and it's got a little rooster on it. Okay, a half teaspoon of turmeric.
Half a little tea turmeric.
Now, if you don't buy a lot of turmeric, buy a small container so it'll stay fresh.
Mm-hmm.
A teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper.
Little tea, freshly ground black pepper.
Do not use pre-ground pepper. It doesn't taste as good, folks. You get a pepper grinder, a nice pepper grinder that you can use and make a half teaspoon. Yes, it will take you 1 minute or 2 minutes of twisting that handle, but it makes a difference. Two medium shallots minced.
Two medium shallots minced.
Yeah, and if you don't have shallots, you could use oregano, but shallots are best.
Mm-hmm.
Two tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
Two big tea, extra virgin olive oil.
Let's make it. So put the potatoes in a large saucepan, add cold water, cover by maybe 2 inches, bring to a boil over high heat, reduce the heat to medium, allow the potatoes to cook for 20 minutes or so until they're tender when pierced with a fork. And if you've never made potatoes, it's time to step up to the plate. They are the easiest thing to make. Tom makes potatoes every day, right, Tom? That's exactly. Meanwhile, make the dressing in a small bowl. Combine the sour cream, Greek yogurt, sriracha, ground turmeric, shallots, black pepper, salt, sugar, extra virgin olive oil, all in a bowl, and whisk it until it's combined. Then drain the potatoes while still hot. Cut them into quarters. Put the potatoes in a large bowl. Add the quartered hard-boiled eggs. Those hard-boiled eggs, very gently pour the dressing over them. Toss it to combine. If the eggs crumble a bit, that's okay. That makes for a tastier salad. Let it sit for 5 minutes till the flavors meld and the sriracha mellows. Taste, add a little more salt if you want to, and you're done. It is delicious.
And if I'd like a copy of this recipe?
You can go to the web at zorbapastor.org, and you can look at that recipe and other fine recipes that will make your life happier, healthier, and better. That's zorbapastor.org.
800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Grand Marsh, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I have a question for the doctor. I'd like to know his opinion on cupping.
Cupping, by the way, is an old... Well, tell me a little bit about cupping and what you're doing. It's an old-fashioned remedy that's been around, oh, gosh, hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. I still remember Zorba the Greek, the movie, and he was cupped in Zorba the Greek. That was probably the first time I saw cupping.
That's not the same as spooning, right?
No, spooning is not the same as cupping. Spooning has been around for millennia. Cupping is new. Spooning
is
ancient.
Well, I will tell you the story that has happened. I received a letter from a hospital in our area that they have opened up a new situation, and that is cupping. And when I got this letter, I was totally shocked because I'm up there in years. I'm in late 70s. Mm-hmm. And as a girl, my grandmother's friend came from Europe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You can know how many years ago that was.
Well, that's because you said you were 79. You sound like you're 39. You've got a wonderful voice.
I'm pretty active. Let's put it that way. So then when my grandmother would say to us, now listen, if you stretch too much, and she talked in German, you stretch your navel. So what you do is you put a piece of bread in your navel. Now you have to, I mean, and this all works.
Sure.
And then you take a birthday candle and you light it, and then you put a little jelly glass over it.
Wait a second, you light the bread in your navel?
No, you light the candle.
Uh-huh.
That is stuck in the bread. Then you put the little jelly glass over it, causes a suction, and pulls your navel up.
Okay.
And the pain is gone.
What kind of bread?
She made her own bread, so it was white bread.
This is white bread, but it was thick white.
And we did that for everything. Backaches, elbow aches, and Mrs. Stein was the woman that did this.
Okay.
In the meantime, a friend of ours became a naturopath.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Somebody that naps all the time?
No, it's not a nap.
And he works solely on the premise that when there's an interruption in the blood flow, there's pain.
Mm-hmm.
So he was familiar with cupping.
Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden this is a big thing, and I keep hearing about it, and I want to say I've been doing this and my family for how many years since I'm a little girl.
So your question is whether cupping works.
No, I know it works for us, but what do you think of it?
Well, I'll tell you something interesting about alternative medicine such as cupping. And cupping fits definitely in the complementary medicine, alternative medicine. There are some people that say when they have cupping, their pain gets better. Their back pain gets better, their shoulder pain, their sinuses may feel better, their allergies feel better, they have more energy. There are many things that Western medicine does not have an answer for. We're not that good at. We have some answer for back pain, shoulder pain, you know, lack of energy in others. We have some answers. We have anti-inflammatories. They work for some people. For other people, they cause a GI bleed or they cause heart attacks. You know, we have Tylenol. They work for some people. Things, you know, they may not work for others. So anything you can do that may activate something in your body may be something that's useful. There's, as far as I know, when we look at scientific evidence of cupping, we don't see a lot, but we can't do a double-blind placebo-controlled trial of cupping because you'd know it actually was there. So I think it works for you and works for your family, and you have found it useful. I think I would continue doing it. Now, there's some things I would not do cupping for. Tuberculosis, I don't think cupping is going to do much. A heart attack, I would call 911. Mm-hmm. Things like that, obviously Western medicine is important for. But when you're talking about, you know, the problems that kind of bother us, the aches and pains in life, if cupping works, do it.
Okay.
So your grandmother did this to all of the to your mom and to all of the kids?
Oh, to everybody. Whenever you had a backache, you you laid on the cot and Grammy got out the and you obviously put the bread down on your back and then put the candle and then the, and it puffed it up as soon as it
went
out.
Oh, yeah, no, because of the heat. Yes. What kind of a candle? Did you use like a birthday candle or a thicker
candle?
A birthday candle. Because you don't need very much heat to actually do it.
And then how
long did she leave the cup on? Until it stopped, until it expired?
Exactly. Yeah. All of a sudden it released.
Yeah, that's what it does. It releases because it's not a perfect suction, so it eventually releases.
Yes, but I just thought that it was quite interesting.
Yes.
That all of a sudden the hospital is touting cupping.
Well, the hospital is getting into some alternative medicine.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's a good idea, especially when we look at the opioid epidemic that we have. We look at the opioid epidemic in America that we have. We doctors have caused it. I'm part of the opioid epidemic. I admit it. I've changed my habits. And the reason is we don't have other alternatives to take care of chronic pain. And the answer is these other alternatives may be right in front of us. And cupping may be a useful alternative for people who are trying to get off of opioids.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we should explore.
Well,
thank
my
you.
Friend said it's in my head, but wherever it is, it
well,
works.
But pain is in your head. You know, when you have arthritis pain, it's in your head.
Yeah.
I mean, your joints may bother you, and you may have arthritis in your joints, but why do some people with the same x-ray have pain and other people do not? So,
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you so much.
Thank you.
I really and truly do because I can trust you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that call. At 800-462-7413. This really is an interesting show.
You find it interesting. Well, that's why you've been doing it. You're not bored. You're not falling asleep.
That's 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. Let's check in again with your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. The following email came to us from a listener named Jerry from Edmond, Oklahoma. He writes, Dear Dr. Zorba, while I enjoy all of your show, the Grammar Police segment is probably the most entertaining. Maybe it is time, however, to redesignate this part of the show. Let me offer a suggestion. How about Grammar Cheerleader instead of Grammar Police?
I don't think they'd agree with that. I mean, the Grammar Police and the whole, they're kind of a priggish group. You know, they're the group that, you know, they kind of hold up their nose that we know the right way to say things and read things. I mean, as a group, would you want to have a beer with the Grammar Police? No, you'd want to share tea, like tea and scones.
Well, I'd like to have a beer with Lisa McClendon, who has a new book, says our listener, titled The Perfect English Grammar Workbook.
Ooh.
And here's a quote from her. I hate the term grammar cop. I prefer grammar cheerleader. I'm a proponent of grammar and want people to feel confident using it. People can be intimidated, but often forget language is a tool and you are its master. You use it, it doesn't use you. I really like what McClendon says about grammar, so instead of using this segment as a time to criticize you and Tom about any possible grammar misstep, why not use the segment as a celebration of how our grammar and our language do change over time to serve our particular language needs.
Nice. And she's absolutely right, you know, because language changes all the time. I still remember when I was a kid, Miss Kelly, who was the chief of the Grammar Police, would say, oh, well, the kids are doing this. And she said, kids are baby goats. They're all children.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember thinking, no, we called them kids. I was a kid at the time. Mm-hmm. Well, kids, of course, was the slang word which has now entered the language. You can call children kids. Children is sort of a stuffy word, maybe appropriate. Kids is much more sort of warm and fuzzy. But language does change, and grammar changes. And frankly, if you have perfect grammar in language, you sometimes sound like you're priggish. And gosh, I would never want to sound like a prig.
Do you want to join Zorba's new cheerleading squad? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org and make sure that you diagram that sentence when you send it.
More calls to come, as well as another interesting topic, and we'll be quacking up. All coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, some problems with some painkillers?
Yes. Well, anti-inflammatories. So first of all, let's define painkillers and what they are. You have Tylenol, also called acetaminophen, also called APAP, APAP. That's one branch, one type of painkiller, doesn't upset the stomach, doesn't fit within this. Then you have strong painkillers, opioids such as oxycodone, hydrocodone, and they may be mixed with Tylenol. They're another type of painkiller. Then in between that, we have the anti-inflammatories, over-the-counter anti-inflammatories such as ibuprofen and naproxen. Those are the most common ones. But other anti-inflammatories like Celebrex and Voltaren or diclofenac. And the issue has been for a number of years about the increased risk for heart attacks. Now, when Vioxx first came out and then Vioxx has been taken off the market, it was taken off the market because it was shown that it had an increased risk of anti-inflammatory, you know, from the anti-inflammatory, increased risk of a heart attack. But this particular new study looks at all the other drugs to try to quantitate what that risk is. And it's a study of studies. And it looked at what the risk is. And it turns out the risk is there. Okay, the risk is there. But remember, the risk is different if you've had a heart attack versus if you're a young person.
Yeah.
So in other words, the greater the amount you take on the whole, the greater the risk. So for Celebrex, if it's greater than 200 milligrams a day, and the recommendation is not to go above that, by the way, that carries a risk. For ibuprofen, if it's greater than 1,200 milligrams a day, that seems to carry the risk. And for naproxen, if it's greater than 750 milligrams a day, and that would be three Aleve tablets a day, that increases the risk. So the real issue is, who should pay attention to this? And the answer is people who have had heart attacks, people with heart disease who have had heart attacks. They're the ones that really should think about this. If you're 22 and you're taking an anti-inflammatory and you increase your risk is so small at 22 that I really don't think this has much effect. But if you've had bypass surgery, you've had a heart attack, you've had a stroke, then you want to think about going to, you know, not using anti-inflammatories, if you can, for your pain and using other forms of getting rid of pain. Now,
what again are the drugs that have that risk?
So you want to look at ibuprofen and naproxen. Those are the most common, or other prescription anti-inflammatory drugs. So I think what's important is when you go to your doctor, if you're on an anti-inflammatory, you discuss it with your doctor and say, hey, am I a high-risk person? Should I be off these anti-inflammatories? But, you know, sometimes we need these to survive and do exercise. We know that doing exercise and being pain-free is good. So you've got to balance that. This is a benefit risk ratio that you have to look at on what works right for you and what doesn't.
800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a listener with us in Monona, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
My concern is for my sister who is about to have bypass surgery. She's 72. She's had two stent surgeries before this. And each of those occasions, she coded.
Wow.
Yes. And she was, it was explained to her that it was because of the iodine.
Oh, okay.
And so, of course, they won't use that.
So wait a second. They used iodine, and she was allergic to the iodine or something, and they used the iodine again? That would be pretty unusual.
They didn't understand that that was the first code, I guess.
Oh, I see.
And the second time, that's what they concluded.
Okay.
Anyways, they have open-heart surgery probably within a matter of weeks.
Sure.
And she enjoys 1 to 3 scotches on the rocks before dinner.
Before
wine,
dinner.
Wine with and after dinner, usually daily, I think. She's not living in the same state as I do, so I don't really know exactly. But this is what she has said.
Okay, so she's a drinker. She has 1 to 3 scotches before dinner, and she has wine with dinner. I think we would define her as either a heavy drinker or an alcoholic. One of the two. Certainly a heavy drinker at minimum.
Well,
not everyone has 1 to 3 scotches before dinner. That is not common.
Yeah. I know that, and I'm concerned about it.
Right.
But my concern also is that this intake of alcohol may not be compatible with anesthesia. So anyway, as I said in early, well, it was early March, that she had 3 stents put in her chest. mm-hmm. near the Carradas, and it was to have been one. Mm-hmm. And what was to have been a two-hour surgery became a five-and-a-half-hour surgery.
Wow.
And then she coded 2 hours uh-huh. later.
Oh, that is terrible. So you want to know what advice to give your sister? You think that would matter?
Because,
think it would matter to her? What do you think? Would she take your advice?
Sure.
Yeah, but I think giving advice is good. When you think something is wrong, you should tell people. Sometimes it's tough, but you know, you have to bite the bullet, man up and tell people, women up and tell people. So I think you should tell her, hey, I talked to this doctor, you know, this doctor on public radio, and he said drinking that much alcohol is not a good idea, and she should taper off before her surgery. No doctor would say, oh, keep on drinking 5 to 6 drinks a day before your surgery, you'll be fine. Among other things, she might be drinking more than that, and she might go through withdrawal during the surgery and after the surgery. So all of a sudden, she's not only recovering from her surgery, but she's going to withdraw from her alcohol, because the fact is, you don't know how much she drinks. But many people who drink that much actually drink more than they say. So she has 3 scotches before dinner. It might be 2-finger scotch, and she might end up having 6 scotches before dinner. You don't know. So what you really want to do is you'd like her to be alcohol-free a week prior to the surgery.
If you're a drinker, though, you might not listen to what anybody says.
Well, you might not listen to what anyone says no matter what, but I think it's kind of your duty as her sister to tell her what it is, and she'll make her own decisions. But sometimes people actually change. Mm-hmm. Not always, but sometimes they'll go, you know, I'm not going to stop completely, but I'll go down to 1 drink a day. You never know. You also have to try to be convincing. This is serious. She coded twice. I mean, my God. If
that's
not, it's what scares her. And if she's going through alcohol withdrawal during that, that's a serious thing. Also, she has to be honest when she goes into the hospital and the intake person will ask her, how much do you drink? She has to be honest and tell them how much she will drink. So if she goes through any kind of withdrawal, they know what they're looking for. Otherwise, she has a danger risk for death. And I think you've got to, it's not just scaring her, it's telling her the truth, and the truth is frightening.
Yes. Okay.
Very nice that you're so responsive. Older sister or younger sister?
She's a younger, 8 years younger than
I am. Have you always taken care of your sister?
No, I have not. Uh-huh. And she has a very attentive husband who mm-hmm. denies that she drinks this much.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not unusual at all. Does he drink, by the way?
He just drinks beer.
Mm-hmm. How much beer does he drink?
Oh, I don't really know.
Well, he may drink as much as she drinks, but he just drinks beer. Just drinking beer is the same as just drinking spirits. I mean, ounce and a half of spirits are a can of beer. And they may sit every evening and they, you know, binge drink. They drink together. They might have. We don't know how much they're drinking, but they're obviously drinking together. So he doesn't care because he's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Step in as the older sister. Give her your advice. Let the chips fall where they will.
Thank you. Thank you for your help and concern.
You're welcome. And thank you for your help with your sister.
We appreciate that call at 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, let's dive into the murky waters of medical quackery now. Time again for Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, usually we have to travel way back in time for this segment, but today we're going to talk about something that has happened very recently. Tell us about the British entrepreneur Leo DeWatts.
That's right. Leo DeWatts is selling air to make you healthy. That's right. You can buy British air in a bottle, $115 a bottle. Now, that's better than any champagne I've ever had, but this is air. And he's selling it to Chinese buyers because in China, as you know, there's tremendous air pollution. And there's some Chinese who have lots and lots and lots of money. And so they're buying British air, and he's capturing British air. And it's all, but it's not just plain British air. It depends on what you have. So if you've got rheumatism, it'll be British air perhaps from the high islands. And if you've got depression, he'll have British air from, you know, from different parts of the lowlands or the midlands. He'll have British air from the sea. He has British air from different parts of London where the air tends to be cleaner because there's really bright skies that are going through there and right things. And so he's quacking up, he's quackery by selling British air to make you feel better. And he's making a ton of money. In fact, you can buy today, you can buy a 15-jar gift set of British air. Now, I want you to take a deep breath, Tom, for only
$1,200. Oh,
you can buy a 15-jar of British air.
I'm living in a polluted environment,
that's right.
So I'm going to get better by what?
You just don't feel good. You've been tired all the time, so you're going to buy a bottle, suck it in, and all of a sudden you'll feel really good when in reality somebody is sucking out your wallet, the money from your wallet. But that is absolute quackery that you can actually taste or smell the difference in air, and it's going to help you. So this is modern quack.
How dumb can you be to pay that kind of money for a bottle of air?
British air. That is a good question.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones now, Zorba, at 800-462-7413. Let's see if we can help a listener in Brooklyn, New York. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling. I have a sort of different question. So I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's disease, mm-hmm. and I have a thyroid issue, and I went to an acupuncturist, and they recommended I do, I'm also trying to get pregnant, so he recommended this autoimmune paleo diet, mm-hmm. which I've been trying to do, but I've adjusted it a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but I was just wondering what you might recommend for my situation.
So what kind of symptoms do you have? Hashimoto's thyroiditis is an autoimmune disease where the thyroid becomes inflamed. You've had your TSH level taken, your thyroid level taken?
The most recent one, I think it was at about like 5, which is not
That
too
makes
high.
That's kind of right in the middle. That's right in the middle.
Uh-huh.
Are you taking any regular medication for this or not?
Yes, I take Zinthroid. I take 100 milligrams every morning.
Okay, so you take 100, micrograms, 100 micrograms.
Yeah,
100 milligrams would be a lot more of the dose. Well, it's very interesting. The Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is an autoimmune disease where our thyroid basically is destroyed by our own antibodies, we don't really understand that very well. And I think looking at some kind of a dietary form is a good idea. It might actually produce something. The real question is, will a paleo diet actually reduce the inflammation, you know, that's being caused by another part of your body that's causing the Hashimoto's disease? And there are no scientific studies on it to show it, but the reality is there's no harm in it to see. But the question is, how do you govern it? In other words, you're taking a Synthroid right now to replace the thyroid hormone that you're not making. Are you having any other symptoms from your Hashimoto's thyroiditis?
Well, I mean, I've been gluten-free for, like, 4 years, so if I do eat gluten, I definitely notice, like, you know, more bloating and stomach issues, digestion. And since I eliminated dairy, I definitely think that's helping me, like, also with issues of gas and stuff like that. But, yeah, I think in general I've always had, some issues with energy, so I definitely feel the Zinthroid helps with that and some of the diet as well. I've added in like nuts and rice because it was just too much for me to just try to only eat vegetables and proteins. And he also wants the vegetables ideally to be cooked. This is part of the Chinese medicine format, which is hard to have time to always be cooking lots and lots of vegetables.
Right, and the other issue is when we cook vegetables, we actually destroy vitamins. Every time you cook a veggie, you destroy some of the vitamins of the veggie because they're So I think not being strict with the paleo diet is useful because you don't have to believe the whole thing, you know, hook, line, and sinker. You can take part of it. I think what I generally advise people is you try, if you're going to change your diet, you do it for 3 months. You give it a 3-month trial. to see what it's doing. And after 3 months, you've given it a good trial to make a decision. And then if you question it, you stop it, go back to, you know, a diet that, you know, that, you know, that is a bit more liberal. You liberalize the diet and see how you feel at that time. But I think I'd give it 8 to 12 weeks. I think 3 months, you know, between 2 and 3 months, you're going to see if it's doing anything. But I don't think you have to be strict. It turns out raw vegetables, for most people, raw vegetables are going to be, you know, the more raw the vegetable is, the better off it's going to be. But like cooking with a stir fry, is not going to destroy it as much as boiling or having it in the oven, bringing it more there. So, but I think I would try it, especially if it might give you more energy. Your TSH sounds like it's right on key for what it should be, somewhere in that range.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
You
yeah,
too. Okay.
Thanks. We appreciate the call. Before we sign off, Zorba, we love it when our listeners post on our Facebook page. So it's time again for Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
The following note came to us from a listener named Joe. Dear Zorba, since you asked, I just thought I'd shed light on the saying, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It comes from a time when a family of farmers lined up for their weekly or monthly bath. Baths were taken in a metal tub outside, starting with the family patriarch, followed by the wife and the children, oldest to youngest. The water remained in the tub for each bath, and the baby of the family would get the bath last. The water got steadily darker with each bath as the amount of dirt increased. The bath water could be very muddy by the end, and there might be a danger of losing the baby and all that murk. That's the saying, don't throw the baby out with the bath water.
I've got the image of everyone sort of lining up in long johns and looking kind of dirty and filthy, and, you know, and the pop is there smoking a cigar, getting in the bathtub. This is a pretty funny thing.
Please, listeners, keep us awash in our digital bath of Facebook comments, or just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll see you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0603Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.